The U.S. military presence on Okinawa dates back to World War II. So does our next story. It's about a battle that took place in October 1944. A U.S. infantry battalion broke through German lines in northeastern France. The men, mostly members of the Texas National Guard, found themselves surrounded by Nazi forces. They were dubbed the Lost Battalion. Many thought they were goners. A combat team of mainly Japanese-American soldiers was sent to rescue them. A fierce battle ensued. There were heavy casualties. But the Lost Battalion was indeed rescued. I spoke with two veterans of the battle. First, Lieutenant Erwin Blonder, a member of the Lost Battalion. He told me how his unit ended up behind enemy lines.
We were lured by the Germans and trapped. They knew we were coming. We were about 280 men, and after the first day there, we were surrounded by the Germans. We had no way of getting out. One of the companies tried to leave the area, and they were captured by the Germans, and we never heard from them again, leaving us about 220 men. We had no food, no water. We had a problem. We were told by the division to try to break out. We decided we wouldn't leave because we had wounded with us, and we didn't want to leave them there. And we told the Americans that they would have to come and rescue us. But we were being attacked by the Germans. They would throw in artillery shells into our area every night. And during the day, we'd get these tree bursts, which were horrible. But we were able to dig in deep enough in our foxholes and protect ourselves. It was cold, rainy, damp. It was a nightmare.
Well, let's turn to the rescue team. Lieutenant Ito Susumu, your combat team, the 442nd Regiment, was sent in to rescue Lieutenant Blonder's regiment. You, like most others in your regiment, we should say, were serving your country despite the fact that your entire family was forced into an internment camp here in the United States. And that was the case for most of those in your combat team, right?
Yes, it was for half of us. The other half came from Hawaii, and they were very young. Many were 18, 19-year-olds. I was a mortar sergeant, but that was very routine and boring. So when an opportunity came up to join the instrument section, which is involved in directing artillery fire, I volunteered for this. And casualties were enormous, but at the time I thought, this is what war is like, and this is what I'd asked for.
All I remember is being cold, wet, dreary. I got trench foot when I was up there. I had to be carried off the battlefield because we weren't able to change our socks or to change our clothing. It was just miserable. However, the morale was such that we decided we would never give up. We wouldn't surrender, and we would really probably fought to the last man if we had to.
And Lieutenant Ito, I mean, we have to say that it is something of a miracle that you survived this. I mean, you were the one who went up on the front lines before everybody else, kind of marking positions and where the infantry from the 442nd behind you would fire.
Yes, we could hear machine guns. I could hear Germans shouting at us when they pinned us down to surrender. Hands up, they would say. But you had no idea where they were. Even at this very moment when I think about it, when I see a dark forest, heavily wooded, and it's dank and dark, even on a sunny day, I get goosebumps all over me. I don't recall having goosebumps during the war, but I certainly get them now.
Lieutenant Ito Susumu, you went in, you rescued Lieutenant Blonder's regiment. How did it end? What was kind of the finale of the battle?
Well, it was fierce infantryman to infantryman. We had tanks, but they couldn't see their targets either. It was mostly the riflemen who went from tree to tree and finally overran the last of the resistance. I saw many of the 36th Division coming out of foxholes. Their foxholes were the deepest ones I've ever seen. But they would come out of these holes, bleary and weary looking. They seemed almost stunned to me.
The important thing about this whole operation was they went through hell to get to us. They had to crawl on their hands and knees, crawl up this mountain. And when you realize what they went through, the prejudice, how they wanted to prove they were Americans and to fight as Americans, they were the most decorated outfit the U.S. Army has ever had. Mm. I believe they had about 28 Medal of Honor winners, which really were not given to them until President Clinton did this in 1990. You know, the sad thing about this particular action got a lot of publicity in newspapers in the United States when it happened. Not one word was said that we were rescued by the 442nd Japanese American Combat Team. That's the kind of prejudice we had in those days.
What did they say? The media just
they
said
didn't
they
mention
got,
any,
that you guys
they
got
mentioned,
rescued.
They just said we were rescued. They mentioned never mentioned the 442nd, never mentioned they were rescued by the Japanese Americans.
Lieutenant Ito, if I were Japanese American during World War II and I got called up for this, I think one of two things would have gone through my mind. I might have felt as though I had to prove I was a good American, or maybe I would have been angered that suddenly I got called up and they're going to stick me on the front line in this kind of sacrificial lamb move. Did either of those two things go through your head?
No, I did not experience with any of my colleagues any reservation, resentment, or feelings of being discriminated against, although we probably were. But since we in the United States are a land of immigrants except for the Native Americans, the barriers between groups are breaking down. So maybe the next 1,000 or 2,000 years, I see the future as an integration of the society with perhaps much, much less ethnicity groups.
Well, 1,000, 2,000 years is certainly a long time. Let's just talk about 65 years. I'm wondering if you see a parallel between Japanese Americans and Muslim Americans today, Japanese Americans in World War II and Muslim Americans today in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes, definitely. I can see where the Muslim Americans now are discriminated against. Their position is quite parallels the Japanese Americans in World War II. But I feel confident that this will be overcome and that we'll accept Muslims as equally good Americans. And this may take a few years, but I see that it's coming. I hope it's in my lifetime.
I hope so, too.
So do I. Susu's story is a remarkable story. I admire him for what he's done. And I think everybody should admire all the Japanese Americans who really came back home and made a life for themselves in spite of all the prejudice. They couldn't even go back to the West Coast and get back their homes after the war. It was just a shameful blot in our history.
And Susu, of course, is the gentleman sitting with us here in the studio in Boston.
Susu's a man sitting with you.
Yeah.
I'm 6'4", and Susu's about, what, 5'4", for Susu?
No, I've shrunk to about 5'2".
I shrunk to 5'2". Anyhow, we're the long and the short of it.
Right. One way to put it. Lieutenant Ito Susumu and Lieutenant Erwin Blonder, thank you very much for taking the time to tell us your stories today.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Susu, goodbye.
So long.
Okay.